this and that and listen. Super Story Sound Shores on Springbok Radio. Sure to meet someone you know on Springbok Radio.
Good evening from Henry Diffenthal. Tonight we present an hour-long Lux Radio Theatre written for us by Stephen Grenfell. It's called 16 Lives of a Drunken Dreamer, starring Michael McGovern, Maureen Adair, Harold Freed, Merle Wayne, and a host of other very good actors.
This is my office. Sit down, will you?
Thank you.
What can I do for you, Miss Baker? One of the chaps won the pools or something?
I wanted to talk to you about one of your inmates, Superintendent.
Inmates?
If that's the wrong word, I'm sorry. I'm not very well up in the jargon of your world.
Guest is perhaps a bit strong. This is a lodging house. A common lodging house, we're sometimes called. But we aren't a casual ward, you know. Let's settle for clients or customers.
All right, I'm sorry. I want to talk to you about one of your customers.
Can't you talk to the man himself?
Not in this instance. He's dead.
How did you come to learn about Jack Malilieu?
On national newspapers, we have our methods.
Miss Baker, if you expect me to help you, you'll have to do better than that.
One of our reporters happened to be in the local police station this morning when a constable mentioned that an old man called Malilieu had been found dead in his cubicle in mysterious circumstances.
Death can be very unmysterious, you know. Miss Baker, for the life of me, I simply can't see what interest you can possibly have in a penniless old drunken layabout. Neither you nor your readers were interested in him when he was alive. Why this sudden overwhelming interest now that he's dead?
Was he really a drunken old layabout?
You reporters never let go, do you?
We wouldn't be much good if we did, would we?
All right, Miss Baker, how can I help you?
I'd like to see the room, the cubicle he lived in.
It's on the top floor, and there aren't any lifts here.
Well, I need some exercise. Thank you, Mr. Waldron. Is there anything else?
His medals.
Oh, where are they?
In my pocket. Here.
Oh, and that? That's it, is it?
Yes, Miss Baker, that's the Victoria Cross.
Oh, I've never seen one.
Very few people have.
It doesn't look important enough, does it?
Not really.
And that medal was won in action by a man you call a drunken old layabout.
Well, even heroes have to grow old eventually, you know.
That doesn't necessarily mean they have to change in other ways.
It could be that you've got it the wrong way round, you know.
The wrong way round?
You come here to investigate the life of an old man who happened to be a hero when he was a young man.
Yes.
You speculate what he must have been like as a young man.
Well, yes.
You imagine his character, his qualities, his attributes.
I suppose that's what I have been doing.
You assume that he must have possessed those qualities, those characteristics, to have behaved as he did, to have become, in fact, a hero.
Yes. Why not?
Then, a whole lifetime later, when he's an old man, and he exhibits a different set of characteristics from the one you've chosen, You're annoyed.
Oh, I'd hardly say I was
annoyed. Well, surprised, then. And you say, my, how he's changed.
Well, he obviously has.
Not necessarily. That's why I say it could be that you've got the whole thing the wrong way round.
Perhaps.
Look, winning that VC was an incident that occupied only a very few minutes of Jack Malilieu's life. A few brief minutes out of 62 years.
Well, I see that, of course.
Those few minutes might be quite alien to the man. Mind you, I don't for a second say they were, I say they might be. As a young man, he might have been actually the same sort of person he was as an old man. Exactly the same sort of person. That Victoria Cross episode might have been a flash of something that wasn't the real man at all. Something he was overwhelmingly moved to do on the spur of the moment. Living under heaven only knows what kind of tension and stress and fear.
I don't really see where we're getting. A young man wins the VC in battle. 45 years later, he dies in a doss house. An old, now unknown, penniless, drunken layabout, to use your own description. So he was a failure. I take it we're agreed about that, Mr. Waldron.
Yes, I suppose he could be described as a failure. But whereas you feel he became a failure after a very good start, I'm suggesting that perhaps a man like that was a failure to begin with, in spite of that one incident which made him greater than he was.
Yes, I understand. Perhaps I've come here to write a story about the wrong man.
Just what kind of story are you going to write?
I'm not sure yet. I've got to know more about that Victoria Cross. But I dare say it'll take the War Office quite a time to dig out the details of a VC won nearly half a century ago.
I could give you the information.
You?
Why not? I know the story as well as the War Office. Perhaps even better.
But how?
You'll just have to take my word for it.
Well, what exactly did happen that day in March in 1918?
The war still had 7 months to go. The Hun was nearly finished. And he made his last big effort at Vimy Ridge on the 28th of March. It was a massed attack. And to try to achieve success at this very late stage in the game, the Germans threw in absolutely everything they could lay their confounded hands on. And how very near they came to pulling it off. How very near.
Just look at the swines. Talk about sardines.
Never thought we left so many of the swine alive, Mr. Malilieu.
They multiply like rabbits. An ancient Hun habit. Very unpleasant.
Giving C Company a tousing for rabbits.
Happily phrased, Sergeant Nimmer.
Number 2 platoon's not going to get back out of that lot in a hurry. Their orders were to withdraw 10 minutes ago.
They can be got out, you know.
Come off it, Mr. Malilieu. They're surrounded.
Not quite. They've got the Boche on both flanks, I agree.
And behind?
No. See that sap behind Mr. Lowe's headquarters?
Yes, I've got it, sir.
It leads straight back into the main support trench. And the Boche hasn't cut that yet.
Perishing near, though.
But not quite, Nimmo.
Private Thompson doing the under in 10 seconds flat.
Cool. How many men still alive in 2 platoon, Thompson?
14 when I left, sir.
And Mr. Lowe?
Badly hit, sir. Just before he sent me back.
What happened?
He got it in the chest, sir.
Oh.
He's a goner if we can't get him out quick.
What about ammo?
He ran out, sir.
Oh, that settles it.
Well, what are we up to now, then, sir?
You, Nimmo, are going to stay put and give me all the covering fire you can ruddy well lay your hands on.
And you, sir?
I'm going to see if I can't take some of the pressure off 2 platoon.
Have a heart, sir. You must be off your nut.
Not more than usual, as the adjutant would say.
Then I'd better come with you.
Sergeant Nimmo, you're going to remain in this trench and give me covering fire.
Cool, lummy. Some young officers.
And that's an order.
Very good, sir. But you'll never make it on your Todd.
Well, perhaps not.
You can get court-martialed for this sort of caper.
You've forgotten, Nimmo, that I'm already up for a splendid court-martial when we get out of this line, if we get out.
You're going up the communication trench, sir.
Too ruddy narrow. I'm going to take my chance in the open.
No, I know you'll start raving crackers.
Well, much quicker across the open. Stand by then, huh? Right, Nimmo. Give me a heave up, huh? Now.
Good luck, sir.
Huh.
All sections, rapid fire!
You unlovely baskets. That too. Number 2 platoon. Out of it. Come on, back you go. Come on now, get moving. Come along, lads. Oh, Roger. Roger, old horse. Come on. I'm going to carry you. Come on.
Morning, Malilieu.
Good morning, sir.
I'll come straight to the point, Malilieu.
Yes, sir?
Since you joined this regiment, you've had a rather checkered career.
I'm afraid I have, sir.
At the front recently, that career took an even more spectacular turn, didn't it?
I'm afraid it did, sir.
Just what do you expect me to do about it?
Have me court-martialed, I suppose, sir?
Yes. Well, Merrilew, I'm putting you up for the Victoria Cross.
But you can't, sir.
I can't very well help myself.
But I thought...
We're going to have to forget that other business, Merrilew.
Oh, I can't believe it, sir.
We don't want to confuse those brass hats at division. But I warn you, Merrilew, this is quite definitely the last time.
Oh, yes, sir. Definitely, sir.
For heaven's sake, man, give up the bottle. Your nerves are no worse than anyone else's out here. You haven't been out here very long, either.
Only 8 weeks, sir.
Not a quarter as long as I have.
No, sir, I realize that, sir.
Then why the devil do you do it?
I honestly don't know, sir. I really have tried, but when I've had a drink somehow, I can't help myself, sir.
Then you'll just have to give it up altogether, go TT completely. Otherwise you know what's going to happen to you, don't you? You're going to wind up a first-class failure. You'll drink yourself into the gutter. You'll end up without a job, penniless, sweating and shaking in some rotten, awful doss house in the East End, without a single friend in the whole world. You want that to happen?
No, sir.
Then give up drink, man.
I'll do my very best, sir.
Well, that's all, Melville.
Yes, sir.
Except one thing. Last Thursday afternoon. That was a splendid show, Melville. A splendid show indeed.
Thank you, sir.
And I sincerely hope His Majesty will make a point of telling you personally at the next investiture he holds. Right, cut along.
Very good, sir.
Mr. Waldron, you describe very graphically indeed the way this man Malilio won his VC.
I said you would have to take my account on trust.
Yes, but you can't help my speculating about the part you yourself played in that story.
Miss Baker, I can't stop you speculating, and I couldn't care less how much you speculate or what about. As long as you don't do it in print for your millions of eager readers.
Oh, I shan't write about you.
Good. Well, now, I take it, you've got your story?
Oh, yes. And a very good one, too. But I'd just like to ask you some questions about his later life.
Vicar, Vicar. Hmm? You won't believe it, but there are at least 50 people in the church.
50? Are you sure, Basil? There can't be.
I'm very much afraid there are, Vicar. And the press, too, all over the place. And now a television camera team has arrived.
Really?
Vicar, I don't think these people are what you would call sightseers.
What makes you say that, Basil?
One or two of the ladies are wearing mourning. And riffraff just out for a morbid Roman holiday would scarcely do that, would they, Vicar?
Hardly. You know what this is going to mean, Basil, don't you?
Mean?
Oh, really, Basil. I had thought, mistakenly, as it now turns out, that this would be a perfectly simple, uncomplicated burial service. I mean, here was a tramp who died in a in a lodging house, an old man without either money or friends, and certainly not one with relatives. Accordingly, I very much regret that I not thought it necessary to prepare a funeral oration.
Yes, I do see, Vicar.
Well, now, Basil, if you'd perhaps be so kind as to acquaint the congregation of the fact that, owing to unforeseen circumstances, the service will not actually begin for a few minutes. Brethren, we are gathered here today to take farewell of and pay our last respects to the mortal remains of John Alderton Malilew, one of the unfortunate lost souls of this world, now gathered at last to his almighty Father in heaven. Brethren, I must be frank with you and explain that in all innocence I had not anticipated that the deceased would draw to this burial service the number of mourners who have made their appearance here today. We have joined together to commit to the soil the ashes of a man who, apart from one glorious incident in his early life, it would seem failed utterly to utilize the talents with which he was undoubtedly blessed at birth. if it is our object as human beings to be honest in
Why
life...
Why is it the church still seems to attract this particular type? Talk, talk, talk. Doesn't believe half of what he's saying. Taking it out of all of us here because we let Jack die alone, unwanted. And now at the last minute he's stuck with a sermon or a funeral oration or whatever it's called. He just couldn't be more wrong, silly little man. Repeating in a suitably sepulchral voice everything that equally silly young woman wrote in her article. How dare he talk about my husband like this? I've a good mind to stand up and shout out, idiot, or show just cause or impediment or whatever it's called. What does he know about this man? How dare he talk about him like that when he never saw his live face or listened to his voice? Oh, Jack. Jack, why did you drive me away? Why? We were so young. There was so much for us to learn. We could have been so happy if only we'd tried a little harder. If only I had tried harder.
Oh, darling. Oh, darling, I simply can't go any further.
All right, we'll have lunch here.
Oh, lovely, I'm starving.
You modern women, really. Screaming for Lloyd George to give you the vote while you're still children.
Well, why not?
An ordinary hill climb knocks you out.
Oh, darling, I'm too famished to argue politics. Oh, what a lucky person I am.
Why do you say that, Kate?
It's an absolutely heavenly day. I'm sitting high on a lovely mountainside enjoying that heavenly day. The war's over. There'll never be any more war in the world. And I'm with a terribly handsome young officer who just happens to be one of the nation's heroes with a real live Victoria Cross, and I like him very much indeed.
Oh, Kate, do you really?
Darling, you know I do. Jack?
Yes?
Tell me about your VC.
Oh, have a heart, Kate.
No, I don't mean tell me what you did. I know that from the newspapers when you went to the palace. I mean, tell me what made you do what you did.
You want me to be really honest, Kate?
Aren't heroes always honest?
I shouldn't think so for a moment. I'm going to be honest with you anyway. I wanted to be killed.
You can't be serious.
I was going to be court-martialed when we got out of the line.
You court-martialed?
I got tight with a sergeant in the front line.
Oh.
I knew it would kill Mother when she found out. She was so terribly proud of me. You know what mothers are.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't a very pleasant prospect. I couldn't face it. When you get to know me better, you'll realize, Kate, that I take the easiest way out.
The easiest way?
Well, the Boche was making his last throw. One of our platoons was cut off, so I thought, what the heck? Might as well do it now. This is as good a time as any. So I did it.
You really didn't want to get back alive?
No, Kate. And I certainly never thought I would. When I eventually did, I was the most surprised British officer in the whole of France, I can tell you. When I got there, you see, Roger Lowe was still alive. And I thought, well, we'll never do it, of course, but we may as well have a try at getting him back in one piece. You never know.
And you did?
In some extraordinary way, yes. He's as fit as a flea.
And what about the court-martial?
Well, the old man, he's only 26, really, the colonel, was in a bit of a dither. He'd happened to see the whole thing, apparently, and I suppose he felt morally bound to do something about it. So he very decently forgot the other business.
I'm glad.
So was I, darling, very glad, I can tell you. He really is an amazing person, Mark Waldron. Loyal and understanding. I wish he could be my friend. I'd give anything for that.
Isn't he?
I'm afraid not.
I'm glad, too, you told me about the court-martial.
Why?
Because you needn't have done. I'd never have found out, would I?
No, I don't suppose you would.
And I like to know that the man I'm going to marry is always honest with me.
What did you say?
Oh, darling, please don't be so blind. I'm madly in love with you, and as we're being emancipated and we're going to get the vote... I'm being awfully unmaidenly, as Mother would say, and taking my girlish courage in both hands and asking you to marry me.
I don't know what to say.
Well, you could start by saying you love me, if you do, that is. Oh,
darling Kate, of course I love you. And I want to marry you more than anything, but you can't marry me.
Why ever not?
Oh, heavens. Kate, just now you said you wanted your husband always to be honest with you.
Well, of course.
Well, here goes then. I'm not going back to the regiment.
But I thought you said you'd been given a permanent commission, or whatever they call it.
Well, that's all over now.
But, darling, what's happened?
Well, you won't speak to me after this.
I'll have to be the judge of that.
I stole some money.
You? I don't believe it. You're just saying that because you want to...
It's called misappropriating mess funds.
And this time you're really going to be court-martialed?
Yes.
Oh, poor Jack.
It's fixed for the day after tomorrow. I was given a couple of days' compassionate leave to see my bank manager about paying the money back if possible. But he wouldn't play. So I rang you up and said, let's climb a mountain.
Is there any chance that...
No chance at all, Kate. This time next week I shall have been cashiered.
What about your Victoria Cross?
Apparently they haven't had a case like this before.
I don't suppose they have.
The Colonel made some inquiries. Apparently it's up to the monarch. If the King decides I've got to give it up, then that's that. If he decides that whatever I did to win the wretched thing can't be washed out, as it were, then I'll be allowed to hang on to it.
Good. Then we'll give it to our son.
You must be off your block, Kate. You can't marry me now.
Jack, in wartime, people get sick. They do things they wouldn't dream of doing normally.
I did this in peacetime.
But, darling, the war's only just over. Men like you, who went through all that horror and misery, they haven't got back to normal yet.
Sometimes I wonder if we ever will.
You see? These things happen. But they aren't the real person at all.
You can't be sure of that, Kate.
I am sure of it. It's done and we can't undo it by talking. So we'll just have to forget about it and make sure that nothing like it ever happens again.
Oh, Kate, my dearest. Oh, you're the only girl in the world for me. You were from the moment I saw you.
Heaven, I shall never forgive you for this as long as I live.
Oh, now, where have I heard those words before? Forgive me for what? For what, for heaven's sake, Kate, old girl? All I did was to have a couple of drinks with the chaps.
A couple of drinks? You're stinking like a brewery.
Oh, come on now, darling.
Don't you darling me. I never want to hear your voice again.
Oh, golly. Aren't we temperamental tonight? If I was the only...
Jack, I mean it this time. I finished with you. This is the end as far as we're concerned.
You're back.
Utterly without hope. To go and get drunk today of all days.
Well, it isn't our anniversary, is it? No, it can't be. I've got it in my diary.
I could kill you. You walk out of this house this morning, leaving me here with a baby who's got double pneumonia. Your own little son. And you swear you'll be back as soon as you can get away from the showroom. And what do? You get stinking drunk with your fellow salesman tonight.
And how is the heir to the Malou fortunes?
Your son, you'll be interested to hear, happens to be dying.
No. Can't be. Nonsense.
Dr. Curzon's with baby now. I came downstairs to stop you making that filthy row. He's going through the crisis at this moment. He's fighting for his life.
while his father sprawls over a table too sudden even to realize what's being said.
He'll make it. He'll make it. You'll see. He's a Malalu. He'll make it.
Doctor. No, I won't believe it. It isn't true.
What's going on here?
It isn't true, is it, Doctor?
Mrs. Mull, you... I can't say how sorry I am.
Oh, no.
At the time, I thought... Well, but there was nothing I could do. Nothing at all. There, there. I'll give you something to make you sleep.
Look, what's going on here? I mean, what's the matter with everybody?
What's going on? Your son, Mr. Malalu, is dead.
Dead, ma'am. Who, we must be honest enough to admit, almost certainly brought unhappiness and despair to more than one human being during his time on this earth. For that, he must be forgiven. As indeed he is now being forgiven by his almighty Father in heaven. Some of you may take exception that I should have chosen to speak. You may think harshly of a man in these forthright terms. I regret that my words should be causing distress to a member of the congregation. Perhaps if the Virgil would see if... perhaps a glass of water?
No, thank you. I'm all right now. I'm very sorry.
Very well. My brethren, it behoves us, if we be honest to his memory, and I desire to believe he would wish us so to be, it behoves us to examine with the microscopic magnification of true love and charity the life this unfortunate man led upon our mortal coil. You all, no doubt, are acquainted with the parable of our Lord.
What am I doing anyway? I'm not really sure. Martina says, Booty, we've worked hard all our lives on our farm and in your business. We haven't got many years left. Let's leave young Klaas to look after everything and go and see England. Every real Afrikaner should visit England once before he dies. So we come here on holiday. Then, man, I pick up an English newspaper and I see they're writing about old Jack. Man, I thought, this is the chap who used to work for me when he was a youngster. Oh, when was it, 1931, that's right. It was the year I had the windmill put up. And before I could turn round, the World Depression is all over us. And I couldn't even pay the construction people for the windmill. A Duplessis not able to pay his debts. Man, I was never so ashamed in my whole life when they came and pulled that windmill down. But Jack, he got us out of it. Allah machtach, he did that all right. Ah, what a brain the boy had. He was a real visionary, just like Jan Swartz, a man who could make the future come alive.
Booty, are you a gambler?
Oh, well, you know I never touch the cards, Jack.
I mean real gambling. Are you the sort of man who's prepared to take a calculated risk?
You know, you Englishmen always talk with such tongue twisters in your mouths. What kind of calculated risk?
Now that you've hit rock bottom, are you prepared to gamble all you've got on something that could bring you in a lot of money, a very great deal of money indeed?
Well, I don't know, man. I certainly need some cash. After all, we've got three children. There'll be others too, I dare say, but... But with the world in the state it's in, the good Lord alone knows what kind of future there'll be for them here in the veld.
Right, Booty, then you're prepared to take a chance.
I suppose I've got to, haven't I?
Now, if this thing comes off, where will I stand, Booty? Mind you, I've got nothing to put in, not more than a few pounds anyway.
Oh, I'll cut you in as a partner. That is, of course, If I go to this mysterious plan of yours and anything comes of it...
Fair enough. Then sell your farm.
Hey, one of your little pigs must have run away, man. Sell my farm? This land I was born on? My great-grandfather settled on this land in 1837...
I know it's going to be a wrench, Footy.
That's putting it mild.
I still say, sell Roy Coppin.
What? At this moment? Well, I'll never get the right price for it at the bottom of the market. Why sell?
To buy another farm.
Now, I know that your brains have been melted in the sun.
Booty, I'm going to let you in on a secret. I know one or two rather strange people back in England.
Yeah, I can believe that.
One of them has written to me and let me into a secret.
Yeah?
Britain is going off the gold standard, and 3/4 of the world's gold is mined here in the Union of South Africa.
Yeah, so they tell me.
Gold is going to be at a premium. This country's going to be rich.
I still don't see, man, what this has got to do with my farm.
There isn't any gold on your farm, Butty.
Tell me something, man, I don't already know.
So you sell your farm and buy another farm, which has gold underneath its mealies and kaffir corn and lucerne.
Where?
About 25 miles from here.
Man, you'll have to take more water with that whiskey you're so fond of. The gold fields of the Witwatersrand are over 50 miles away.
You're wrong, you know. Look, Butty, I've been going into this thing. I've done a good deal of research. But I am working largely on a hunch. I want you to understand that, Butty.
Even for an Englishman, Jack, you really are a strange old carol.
I'm dead certain that a monstrous stream of gold extends a long way past Velferdine. Really certain. And I think the main reef comes right down here within 25 miles of Potchefstroom.
They would have discovered it before, man.
Not necessarily. The geologists still have a lot to learn. Now, I think the reef runs right through Stocky van Breitenbach's farm.
But that's barren land.
All the better. You'll get it for a song. He wants to sell.
Yeah, I know that.
You sell Roy Coppin. Get every penny you can for it.
Yeah?
Then I quietly buy up Stocky's place for you as cheaply as I can get it.
Yeah, he's sick of that land, poor devil. It never was worth anything.
Then you'll have a few hundred over to keep the place going for a bit. We move in, we work like the devil to screw some sort of living out of the place, and maybe next year, or maybe the year after that, they strike the extension on the reef and we're in. To places with farming, now we're in gold. We drag the lovely stuff out of the ground and, Butty, we're rich. Really rich, stinking, fabulously, fantastically, and disgustingly rich.
Jack, you honestly believe this?
Yes, Butty, I do. It could be like the gold rush on the Rand all over again.
Right, man. Then I'll do it.
Splendid.
You and me, man, we're going into the gold mining business.
Yeah, man. I told you Britain was going off the gold standard, didn't I?
Yeah, that really was remarkable, man. I didn't want to believe you at the time, but there was something about the way you explained it all to me. And now they've discovered the new reef. It's confirmed all the way down to Sacrebosch already, only 50 miles away.
Booty, I'm pulling out.
Pulling out?
Yes, I want to get out.
But this is madness. Man, you can't leave now. Wait for another 6 months. We'll have gold here then, man.
I know. Even so, I'm leaving tomorrow.
Sometimes, man, I just can't make you out at all. Why have you got to leave?
You want me to be honest with you?
Haven't you always been?
So far, yes.
Well, then tell me your reason, man, whatever it is.
All right, then. Booty, I'm in love with your wife.
With Martina? In love with my wife? Man, you can't be serious.
In all my life, people keep saying that to me. But I am serious.
I can't believe it, man. Martina's a mother. She's a woman with children.
You make her sound like 90. Your wife, Putty, happens to be a young woman and a darn attractive one at that.
Is she in love with you?
Well, she may think she is.
I ought to whip you off my land with a shambok.
If that'll give you any satisfaction, you can do what you like.
My own wife in love with another man? It's something I've never dreamed of.
My stuff is packed. If you'll let me have the lorry and one of the boys, I'll leave very early tomorrow morning. He can drive me to the station.
Well, where will you go now?
England to begin with. I'm tired of Africa, for the time being anyway.
What about your share in this place?
Forget the tip. write it off against my antisocial behavior.
Oh, man, I made a bargain with you. If it hadn't been for you, I would never have taken the gamble. Now that it's going to pay off in a big way, you ought to get something out of it.
If you really think so.
Well, I haven't got a penny at the moment, Matt.
There's no hurry.
Well, 500 suit you?
In the circumstances, it's more than generous.
Well, I've got your mother's address. Will that be all right?
Fine. When you get the dough?
I'll send it in 50s. How's it come in?
Splendid. Then I won't be able to booze it all away in one fell swoop.
Well, I still feel I owe you more.
All right, Putty. Then do me a favor.
What sort of a favor?
Don't take it out on Martina.
Man, she's got to learn. She can't behave like this.
It wasn't her fault, I promise you that, on my word. It's over and done with, Putty. All the talk in the world won't change it.
I know one thing, Matt. Never again am I going to give a job to the first good-looking Englishman who comes strolling in and spinning me a wonderful yarn on my own veranda.
Fair enough. You see, you stick to that, huh? Now let's go in, shall we? I want to write one or two letters to people in the district, saying goodbye and all that.
Poor devil. He could have done with that 500. And I never sent it. Just the first 50. Oh, what a cheat I turned out to be. Me, a Duplessis. I wasn't a farmer any longer. I've lost my honesty. Gold changes a man. They could have my gold mine if only I could say I'd send Jack the rest of that money I'd owed. And for that, I'll never forgive myself.
Forgiveness. That is God's way. God is forgiveness itself in its purest distillation. Each one of us, sinners that we are, must remember that. And in our mortal, human, fallible way, attempt, however great the provocation or the injury, attempt to emulate that divine forgiveness.
Am I forgiving? Is there anything for me to forgive?
I'll forgive you this time, Jack, but don't you ever try it again. I've been sitting in this bar for a solid hour, getting mildly sloshed, and doing my best to prevent myself being picked up by a half-fighter command.
Oh, that brilliantine mob. You shouldn't be here, Peg. Fully paid-up aircraft woman in the WAFs.
You wretch. Exactly where have you been?
Oh, this is going to make you laugh. I spent the afternoon at Buckingham Palace.
Whatever for?
George VI went bar me and gave me an M.M.
A military medal?
Mm-hmm.
Jack, you aren't pulling my leg.
Cross my heart.
Oh, darling, let me kiss you.
You really want to get a slung out on our necks, do you?
Darling, it's wonderful. So Daddy was wrong.
Your father?
He said you'd never do it again.
What does the old fire eater expect a chap to do? Win a box of coconuts every time there's a war?
Oh, you know what he means.
Anyway, let's talk about something else, shall we?
All righty. I'm going to have a baby.
What? Can't be.
Want a bet?
But, darling...
Don't you want a child?
You know I do, but we can't get married. I told you that about Kate, how we never bothered to do anything about it after she walked out.
And you don't know where she is or even if she's alive. Yes, darling, I know. Now, don't panic. It can all be sorted out. That's if you want to.
Of course I want to, Pig.
I'll borrow some cash from Daddy.
Oh, he'll love that.
And we'll hire some private eye and... You can run your wife to earth, wherever she is, and then the two of you sort out your divorce, and she stops being your wife, and I start being your wife.
How uncomplicated you always make everything sound.
Well, I'm an uncomplicated young woman, didn't you know?
And that's just it, Peg. You are young. You're sure you want to marry an old greybeard of 40?
Well, if you will, give me a baby. Looks as though I'm stuck with my old greybeard, doesn't it?
Yes, Peg, I'm afraid you are. And this time for keeps.
Oh, darling... I do love you so much.
That goes for me too, Peg. Boy or girl?
What? Oh, a girl. Yes, a girl.
Any ideas about her name?
Susan.
Right. Let's get young Susan the heck out of here. If she's anything like her old man, she won't take kindly to the Bosch.
Of course, it was never going to work. I knew that right from the very beginning. It was the war and
the indefinable glamour of 1940. Me, at the age of 30, behaving like a starry-eyed teenager. Susan's got more sense at 21 than I had then. But what woman could help loving a man like that? Poor Jack. He lived nowhere except the future. Past was just bad luck. The present, something to be got through as quickly as possible to get to the shining future. The future for Jack always glittered. Nothing could ever get him down. And I don't suppose for a moment even death has done that. He flicked off failure like drops of water. And that certain, faintly amused look would come into his eyes. Susan used to call it his enthusiasm look. And with nothing but words to support him, he'd paint such a marvelous picture of the times ahead that you simply had to believe him. You couldn't help yourself. Oh, Jack, Jack. If only just one of those marvelous futures had ever materialized.
Well, well, well. Little Lord Fauntleroy himself.
Hello there, darling.
And to what do I owe the unexpected pleasure of my lord and master's return?
Peg, I must say I thought you'd show more enthusiasm when your husband suddenly appears on leave from the war-shattered wastes of Germany.
You might have let me know you were coming.
Sorry, love, it was a last-minute affair.
I'll bet it was.
Where's Susan?
Still at school, of course.
I'll collect her today, shall I?
Yes, it's a good idea. I'm not feeling up to much. That's why I stayed away from the office.
How's the job?
Permanent, if nothing else.
Meaning I'm likely to lose mine.
Are you?
Peg, I've resigned.
Resigned?
All right, I was fired.
Well, what happened? The usual?
If you mean was I thrown out for being sloshed, no. Practically everybody's on the bottle in our lot anyway. So drunk and disorderly doesn't cut much ice officially.
Then exactly why did the United Nations come to dispense with your services?
Black market.
Oh, really, Jack? You're incorrigible. What exactly?
Penicillin. Half the chaps I knew were doing it. It just so happened that I was the sucker who got caught.
Well, then you always were. That's your real weakness. Your fatal transparent honesty for an essentially dishonest person.
Yes. Peg, what do you feel about Australia?
Oh, you mean to go there?
That's right.
To live?
Why not? I've had the UN in a big way, and Britain too, for that matter. I'm fed up with rationing and shortages and the weather and ruddy socialists.
And you think the wide open spaces is the answer?
Well, Peter Harris and I have got a marvellous scheme. You remember Peter?
Oh, vaguely.
We worked out an absolute crackerjack.
What sort of crackerjack?
We're going to open a theatrical agency and import West End shows and artists into Australia.
Whatever for?
Well, the Australians are crazy about culture. Peter ought to know. He's one himself. He says they're screaming to give their homegrown theatre a really international look.
But Jack, you don't know anything about the theatre.
Well, Peter does. He was an actor before he joined up. That's good enough for me. I'm going to be the business manager.
Oh, Jack, you're hopeless.
Peg, it's a really wonderful scheme. Mark my words, it's a chance in a lifetime, and we'll be right in at the beginning. Take the cream off it all.
Darling, you've got your enthusiasm look.
Why not? This is 100% winner.
Well, I must say it would be wonderful to see some real sun for a change and get a piece of meat that really looks like rump steak.
It's a tremendous country to live in. Has absolutely everything.
Well, where will we live?
You'll come.
Well, I'm not going to have much choice, am I?
Oh, Sydney, of course. Peter says it's an absolutely fascinating city.
Well, it'll be wonderful for Susan.
Exactly. Child can grow up properly in a country like that. Plenty to eat, bags of sunshine. We're going to be marvelously happy, darling. Marvelously happy.
So we were. Marvelously happy. What have I got to complain about? Never lasted. But then it never did. And I knew it wouldn't. Even so, we did have two gloriously happy years before. How utterly still Susan is. She hasn't looked at me once all the time that wretched man up there has been drooling away. Not one single look. So intense. So young. So vulnerable. I wonder,
Does she feel she has so much to forgive her father for? She filled with bitter memories. She never speaks about him anymore. Not till we saw the article. Does she still remember the way it all ended? How can one tell what the young think anymore? Even a mother of her only daughter. Never will I forget that day she came back after being with Jack at the Serpentine. They always went there. So solemn and so desperately unhappy. She said, "I know I shall never see Daddy again. What was left of my heart broke that afternoon."
Is it nearly time, Daddy?
Are you so anxious, Susan, to get away from me?
Oh, you know it isn't that, Daddy. Daddy, is it always like this when two people get divorced?
You mean meeting like this?
Yes. You know, only being allowed to meet once a month and me having to stay with Mummy all the time.
Yes, Susan, I'm afraid it is.
Oh, it's an awful bore. I hate it.
Do you?
Yes. What good is 2 hours a month? Only time to walk round the Serpentine and have tea. Oh, Daddy, you're such fun to be with, and I do love being with you.
Susan, I'm never happier than when we're together. I think you know that.
Is it your fault or Mummy's? Honestly, I mean.
Well, darling, if you really want me to be honest, I would say it was mine.
But can't you make it up? I mean...
Not now, Susan, not anymore. In any case, I'm going away soon.
Going away?
Yes. You see, darling, I have to go into hospital again for a bit.
Oh, Daddy, you're not going into a home again.
Yes, I'm afraid that's it.
But that won't be very long, will it? I mean, you never stay very long.
Well, perhaps not. We'll see, darling, when I come out. I thought perhaps I might go abroad again.
Abroad? Where, Daddy?
Well, I thought about Canada.
Oh, Daddy, can't I come too?
Susan, love, you know that's not possible.
Oh, what an awful bore. What will you do in Canada?
Well, I don't really know yet, Susan. I haven't made up my mind. Something interesting, I dare say. Something I haven't done before.
You've done an awful lot of different things in your life, haven't you, Daddy?
Yeah, I'm afraid I have, rather.
None of the other girls at school have got fathers done anything like as many different jobs as you, Daddy.
No, I suppose not.
And their stuffy old fathers stay in one job all their lives.
Yes.
Well, think how dull it must be.
Yes.
I mean, well, always staying in the same old house and never seeing Germany and Australia and moving about and changing schools and never really knowing what...
Yes, it must be ghastly for them. Time's getting on, darling. Let's go and have some tea, shall we?
Yes, let's.
Susan, today I'd rather not take you home to Mummy myself, if you don't mind.
Oh, Daddy, I'm perfectly capable of getting home by myself.
Sure you don't mind?
No. No, I'd much rather say goodbye here, next to the Serpentine.
Say goodbye?
Well, you're going away. It will be goodbye, won't it?
Yes. For a little while. But I'll come back again, darling. You know that.
Yes, Daddy. Of course.
This, then, is our farewell of this unhappy man. Brethren, let us pray.
No! Don't let us pray. This is my father you've been talking about, and you couldn't have been more wrong about him. Oh. How dare you talk about him like that when he isn't here to answer your dreadful accusations? He wasn't like you said at all, nothing like it. And I won't let him be buried without saying that. I don't know who all these other people are, and I don't care. But if nobody else will get up and say you've been talking a lot of nonsense, then I will.
Young woman, be silent. This is God's house.
In that case, you ought to do what God would do if he were here and show a little charity.
Brethren, Let us pray.